outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
Welcome, everyone. And Tracy, I want to just say welcome to the podcast. I'm so grateful that you're able to join us today. I was hoping that we were going to be able to get you last week when Wayne and I cold called you, but it seems like serendipity that we are able to be here this week.
Agree. I'm glad to be here.
This is Tracy Levinson from Wimberley, Texas, who's joining us. She's been an infrequent guest, I guess we'd have to say, on the God Journey. Happy to have her here. We're going to talk about romance and dating and things like that, even though none of us here have done that in a while. But it makes it interesting. Before we do, I want to say this to you, because I neglected to add it in last time, but we were collecting money for a new need in Kenya, right back on top of another need we just collected. And kind of a similar thing happened on this one. We got some money came in from a number of people, and then somebody called and said they'd pick up the rest of the tab. We were able to, less than a week, be able to pull that money together. I'm really grateful. Sarah says that's now over $3.5 million this audience has given to Kenya since 2009 to help with some really significant needs there. It seems like God kind of put that in our lap to be helpful, and people keep responding, and I can't tell you how grateful I am. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And I'm Tracy Levinson.
There we go. And this is the God Journey. We want to welcome you here. We're going to talk, as I said, about romance and dating shortly. Before that, let's see what the best thing we heard this week. Kyle, you're up.
So I was in the mountains for the last 4 or 5 days, and it was my parents, all of my siblings, and all of our kids. So there was 24 of us in the mountains together.
Wow.
And we were all having a great weekend, having a good time. And my little niece ran up to me and said, "Uncle Kyle, you're the fun uncle." And that just, it did something for my heart tank, because to be able to be awarded the fun uncle, especially when there was some really strong competitors, was very heartwarming for me.
Yeah. How did the other uncles feel?
They weren't there, so okay, they didn't hear good. It. So we're keeping the fact that I'm the fun uncle on the down low.
They better not listen to the podcast.
You just that's put right. it on the podcast, dude.
I just outed myself, but that's okay.
Great. And Tracy, we said you might have a best thing you heard this week as well.
I did. I was on a walk, and I decided to listen to a Tim Keller podcast, and he did a teaching on Ecclesiastes. He read the verse in Ecclesiastes, it's 4:5-7, and it says, "Fools fold their idle hands, leading them to ruin. And yet, better to have one handful with quietness than two handfuls with hard work and chasing the wind." And I have literally been in a season where I have a tendency to go, 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 work, 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 do, produce, produce, produce. And I've been trying to find deeper ways of resting and enjoying. And I don't know, just that script, that verse just kind of got me thinking about, what do I have in my hands? Two handfuls of work, not good. Ah. Don't want to be the fool with idle hands, but it's like maybe one hand is full of joy and rest and the other hand can be full of work. That was fun for me to think about.
That's cool. I'm going to try and get two hands full of rest. That's what I'm going for. Forget the work.
I think they call that retirement, Wayne.
Yes, one of these days. I keep thinking about it. Anyway, best thing I heard this week, I heard at lunch yesterday. It was with a couple that I met probably 20 years ago in Alaska, and they've lived in Seattle since, and now they're in Boise. And we were talking over lunch and just talking about, they'd come back from a family reunion thing in France, and one of the people on the tour just asked people, what is the counsel they live by? Connie said this. She said, "Help me love the truth more than I fear the pain."
Ooh.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good thing to, you know, pray. And no matter what circumstance you're in, help me love the truth more than I fear the pain.
I like that.
And we've talked a lot on the God Journey about our aversion to pain and how we would rather grab for an illusion that comforts us than the truth that challenges us. So I thought it was very appropriate.
Yeah, I feel like it goes with the theme of all the healing you guys have been walking through as well. Just healing comes from being willing to face truth and walk through the pain.
Yes, it does. And there seems to be a lot of pain associated with truth. There's a reason why the enemy works in the land of illusions. It really is. Because he can offer us easy comfort instead of, no, I'm going to take the risk here and find out what's true and see how God wants to build on that in transforming our lives. And the fruit of that's always, gee, wonderful. The fruit of going through the truth and even through pain to what God wants us to know is just always better when you look back. Hey, I'm glad I didn't miss that journey. So, Kyle, you wanted to get into this idea of romance and dating, and you're having a lot of conversations with kids at your school.
Oh, I've been having lots of conversations. Yeah, it's been spanning almost every age demographic, varying social demographics, and just really felt like this would be a really intriguing conversation to have, especially because I feel like there is a lot of dialogue that's taking place, but not a whole lot of places to get wise answers or wise feedback, especially for that audience of 16 to even mid to late 20s. There's not a whole lot of really positive or healthy feedback. There's a lot of feedback, but whether it's actually grounded in relational health and healing and insight is to be questioned. And so I have just been kind of mulling over some of the conversations that I've been having over roughly the last two and a half months.
And because we didn't want to just give the male point of view on this, that's why we reached out to Tracy. Said it'd be great to get a woman's point of view as well. And I know, Tracy, you deal with a lot of people who have these kinds of concerns and issues since you wrote the book a while back called Unashamed. Was that what it was called?
Unashamed, Candid Conversations About Love, Dating, Nakedness, and Faith.
Yeah, there you go. Got the whole title in. Look at that. So we thought, Tracy, we reached out. She said, yeah, she'd love to contribute. So let's go, Kyle.
All right, perfect. Well, I've got several questions here and really want to just see what comes out of them and just see kind of what the feedback would be from all from both of you. Let's start with the idea of just where to connect with people. So there's been a lot of dialogue with varying different age demographics that are asking, where do I naturally and organically connect with people in today's culture? Or am I forced to have to connect to them via the online platforms? And so really wanted to explore what third spaces are out there and available for people. How do you start building and creating those really authentic relational connections in an organic way in today's society?
That's a great question. And when you're saying that in your mind, kind of what do you have a certain age group you're kind of thinking about when you ask that question?
That one, I would say, largely comes from the roughly 20 to mid 30s crew. But honestly, I've been also having those conversations with people over 50. And so I think it's very applicable to multiple generations. Even the people who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s are finding themselves on online dating profiles, online dating services, and trying to navigate what does this look like, especially individuals that, for that demographic, individuals who either had a spouse pass away or are navigating a recent divorce, and they're exploring what does it look like to get back into the dating world. And they're finding that a lot of the places that they would normally connect with people aren't in existence anymore. And so now they're trying to figure out, okay, what do I do? How do I build a relationship that still has those really strong foundations and that organic nature?
Okay. I would scroll it back. I deal with mostly women. I used to counsel young men when I was teaching a lot. But at this point in my life, I'm find myself mentoring girls or young women and or divorced women. So it's mostly women. But what I begin with is I always scroll back and try to get underneath the need, which is human beings were obviously not meant to live in isolation, right? And sometimes they're lonely. When you're going to kind of get out there, and some of the things we can talk about, like, so what are some avenues where I can make connections? But before that, I almost think you need to scroll back and look at what your heart is like longing for. You know, what is your, you know, are you lonely? Are you longing to be known? Are you wanting just someone to do life with? And I think it's healthy to kind of identify what it is that you're longing for. Press, well, you know, we'll talk about this too. I'm sure we'll hit this to the, not that this would be void of human beings, but to figure out how you want to press into that with God. Hmm. What does that look like? And then you definitely need God, people, you need God, love and all that with skin on. How can you press into that just in relationship with people? And then once you, I feel like that's your foundation. And then from that place, for sure, there's strategic things that people can do. And I always encourage, you know, there, I'm in Texas, so we've, you know, got a church on every corner, but there are some, and even if you don't go to the church, who cares? We're all cousins. But there are some singles groups, even, you know, if you went to a couple of times just to make a friend, or if you like to hike, some things where you're doing things and you're getting, and again, there is the online thing and it can be successful and you can meet people through that, but I think you need to meet people face to face. And so maybe there's a singing group in town, or maybe there's something you can volunteer for, something you're passionate about. Maybe you're really passionate about food banks and you can volunteer on a Saturday for an hour at the food bank. I think it's just to make your life, to do the best you can to make your life as fulfilling as you can, regardless of the relationship, because we're, everything's fragile. I mean, I'm married right now and, you know, my husband or I could get hit by the Mack truck tomorrow. You know what I mean? And I could be single. I could find myself single. Or you could be divorced, like you said, or you could just be, I have a 40-year-old friend who's gorgeous and precious and she finds herself still single, disappointed about it. But she and this other young woman I know who's in her 30s have spent a lot of energy and time trying to walk into, what does it look like to feel content in my relationship with God? And it's not been, not always easy, because you long for that. How can I have fulfilling relationships? And then how do I put myself out there for a romantic relationship as well?
That's really, I think that's a really insightful feedback on that, Tracy, because I think so often, especially with the divorce piece, there's a whole conversation about identity formation that comes as a result of that, because you've done a period of time in the context of marriage, in the context of us, in the context of relationship. And now all of a sudden that is shifting. And so what does that look like to reconnect with who you are and who God's created you to be? What are some of the areas that may have gone dormant or may have been sacrificed for the sake of that relationship? And do you want to see if those things need to be revitalized? Where do you go from there? And so I think that's a really great point to start with. What is that heart longing? And then go from there, but to be really aware of where is your heart at in this relationship process.
One thing that I like to do with singles is I'll do a relational bucket list with them. And we'll just sit down, maybe have a glass of wine, some cheese, some sushi or something. And I'll have them brainstorm with me about what they long for and what they like in relationships. And at first I just do it fun. Like they might say, I want someone who makes me laugh, or I want someone who I feel safe with, or someone who can keep a secret, or someone who loves my family, or someone who is gentle, or someone who is frugal, or whatever their thing is, someone who's athletic or someone who's really cute. And then I have them brainstorm like sometimes like 30 things, and we have just fun, laugh about it. And then I have them circle their, and I almost ask them to do it from their heart, not just their head, circle their, you know, their maybe top seven. And then I have them prioritize those top seven. And then we just really focus on the top three and talk about why their heart might long for those things. And like, especially someone who's been divorced, sometimes they'll really go, okay, my husband was really fun and he was this, but I didn't feel like I could trust him.
Yeah.
And that, and so all of a sudden, because of their experience, trust, someone who's trustworthy is like becomes, and we, you know, we call them deal breakers. And once they kind of, I found this with singles, if they can identify, and again, sometimes when you're single, you feel like you're just waiting, but it's like making a list can be proactive. And then if you identify like just like a couple of things that your heart would, you know, the Bible says, guard your heart above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. And it's like, what are three things that would really do my heart good if I allowed myself to be in an intimate relationship? And it can be, and usually often, not always, it's similar to what you'd want in a friend. you know, and it's good to kind of reevaluate because at different seasons, your heart might need something different. But I think when you identify that, it helps them when they navigate in the world of the dating scene. They can identify that, oh, this person has this and this and this, but there's something in my top three. You know, maybe you want to be with someone who sees God the way you do, and just in terms of maybe you were married to someone who didn't have a relationship with God, and you really want to experience that with your spouse or your dating relationship. And you just identify those. And I do think it helps you navigate through the dating scene.
What would you say, Wayne?
I like the idea of doing things that are inside of your passion in the community, whether it's athletic, hiking, whether it's volunteering, just be out among people. I know when I went to college, there was 1,000 single women in that other dorm on this campus I was at. And I knew I'd never be near that many single women again the rest of my life, most likely. So I went to college to really find someone that God might give me that we could participate with life together. And so I think that's a good place. I know a lot of stuff's done online now. So again, we're taking the personal connections out of it, regretfully. But at least find, you know, class you can take, something, even in your community, if you're not in college, you can take a class and just something you're passionate about. I've met a lot of people lately, and almost always we talk about, you know, how'd you guys meet? And a lot of times it's, and I know we kind of belittle this, the whole matchmaking kind of thing, but so many times it was a friend who knew someone who thought we would connect well. And getting past the embarrassment of somebody scoping out a romantic relationship for you, I think the recommendation of a friend is probably something that should carry some weight. If somebody comes to you and says, I think you two might hit it off, go and don't get together to see if we're going to get married. Just start with friendship. Start with taking an interest in somebody. Desperation is unattractive. I say that all the time, whether it's male or female. If you're desperate for a connection, that's what I liked about what Tracy said about finding your wholeheartedness inside of God, and look for whatever romance might come as a gift from God to you. So you got your eyes open, but you're not living in the desperation of that or trying to get someone else to fulfill your lack of contentment in Christ. So find it there first. And as you're growing in that, just have your eyes open and be out there and be available and take an interest in people. I know, particularly for men, when I grew up, it was almost men doing all the asking out. Women were not, and women were frustrated. They didn't get a lot of invites or didn't whatever, but a big part of that, and I know it's got some negative connotations to it, but flirt a little bit, guy or gal. Just express your interest in somebody. And I don't mean just, I want to marry you. I just mean be interested in them as a person and see where the relationship goes.
And I would say the flirting thing, it's interesting because I wasn't a believer. So flirting was like, yeah, of course you flirt. But there's something that goes on, as you know, in some of the Christian, overly Christian cultures that's kind of legalistic, that girls, that's really hard for them to think about flirting. It's the whole purity thing that went on and the purity ring and all that made them feel uncomfortable about that part of themselves.
Yeah, that's one of the big spaces. And that was actually one of the follow-up questions. And I think this is a great lead into it, is how do you disarm some of those I kiss dating goodbye principles that were so deeply ingrained in a couple of generations, where it's like, okay, you've got to date on purpose. You can't just enjoy it. So everything has an agenda. Everything has something underlying it. And so there isn't the space to just enjoy getting to know the person without any kind of projected future that this has to go on. What would be your guys' feedback on, what would you just say to somebody who was raised up in that culture, or that's a foundational perspective to their dating world? Is that I kiss dating goodbye, date on purpose, only date for marriage, that type of perspective?
I'm glad it's dying of its own strangeness. You know, it just doesn't work. And a lot of couples that got married that way, because God kind of arranged the marriage, those marriages don't usually go well. It really, there's a connection of interpersonal friendship, enjoying being with each other. I think that was screwy advice the first time I heard it a long time ago, because It just doesn't lead to a wholesome, healthy relationship. And that ever got traction and people were more, I've got to wait till God tells me who I'm going to marry, is just not the best way to go down this road.
Yeah, I didn't even raise my kids with that philosophy, and they picked it up anyway. Just being in the Christian environment, they picked up on some of that. And, you know, it's like I was the mom trying to encourage them to be open to flirting. And I think part of it is that compartmentalizing, I guess what I'm trying to think about. Like, you know, God created, as you know, we all know that, God created our minds, our bodies. And again, I don't mean overly sexual, but like flirting, that's not really sexual, but like kind of being attracted to the opposite sex. It's kind of like poking around in that area, that beautiful area that God created us, because I guess, you know, it's like marriage is the picture of Christ in the church, and what a beautiful picture. And so the fact that I, you know, even a little 14-year-old girl looks at a boy and thinks he's really cute, there's nothing, that's beautiful, that's precious. There's nothing icky about that. And I think that what I've seen in the Christian culture, at least particularly when that book was super popular, is that that was deemed as shameful. And so that's one of the things about all of this, is that there would be no shame in the desire. It's hard to have a desire and have it unfulfilled. That's rough. And it could be something like you always wanted to have, maybe you're married and you wanted to have a baby and you have not been able to conceive a child. That's painful, you know, to have a desire that's unfulfilled. So if you long to have a spouse and it's unfulfilled, that can be painful. But I was thinking about this today too. It's like no one, as we all know, no one in this whole life escapes sorrows or pain or, you know, these unfulfilled longings. And I wish for every woman or man who longs to have a spouse, my desire is for them to have that. Like I pray for that, for every single person who's listening right now, that every person who longs for that would have that fulfilled, in the same way that I would pray for every woman who desired to have a baby or a husband, you know, who wanted his wife to have a baby, would be able to have that fulfilled. You know, all I can do is care about that with you and care for you. It's that whole thing of holding everything so loosely and trusting the Lord. And again, like not as a task, but just for your own heart, learning to be content in God and holding it all loosely.
Especially in that space where the conservative dating on purpose, the it almost felt manipulative in the way that we were connecting with people, because there was this objective, there was this underlying pressure, both for men and women. And so you have this desire, this innate human desire to have this authentic connection with another person, but then you have all this other stuff that's added on to it that then really twists the ability for that connection to be able to grow in a raw and an organic way. This, I think, leads a lot into the conversation, though, that I've been having a lot with some more of the younger audience. Are my standards making it impossible for me to meet people? You know, there's my personal interests are informing my algorithms of my TikTok or my Instagram feeds and stuff. And one of the funny videos that came up was them actually running through the standards that these, let's just say, higher maintenance ladies had. And so their expectations were making over $100,000 a year. They needed to be at least 6 foot tall, that they needed to be physically attractive, that they needed to have no kids, that they didn't have any kids currently. And so the person who's talking to them and interviewing them runs them through the percentage of the population in their region that would fit that category, and it was less than 1%. And so I think there's this idea of, okay, are my standards, are they making it impossible for me to find a healthy relationship? And do I need to change them? Do I need to lower my standards? And yet these are standards like the person has a low body count, so that they haven't had over 100 sexual partners in their dating career.
Under 100. Wow.
Oh, it is not uncommon for triple digits these days.
Wow.
That is not uncommon.
So you got to keep a scorecard. So if you asked, you know,
it's
wow.
According
to, just so you know, this isn't new information. I came from a totally secular background. So that's not new.
It is for me.
It's new to Wayne, but it's not new.
So here's the ideas, the basic ideas that I've gotten were low body count, shared faith, basic financial responsibility, and they have some kind of direction in their life. Those are just a few of the basic standards.
See, when I think of body count, I'm thinking of how many people they've murdered. Please, no more than 3 or 4 past murders in your life.
No, Let's try to keep the serial killer down.
Kyle, the list of 4 things you just gave, any girl or woman that came to me and wanted me to care about this in their life, I would want all 4 of those things for those people. Hmm. All 4 of those things you just listed, I want those for them. It's kind of like the problem with any person you marry or date is that they're a human. Mm. Like they suck because you're a human and you suck too. Like we all, like, you know, it's so funny. It's like God, he loves us all. He adores us, but it's like, we're a mess. We're all just a mess. We're brats. We can be selfish. We're just, but there are character traits that are going to be good for your heart and not good for your heart. And so, yeah, if a person's really messy, it can be really annoying. Or if someone talks too much, that can be annoying too. but those aren't deal breakers. Those shouldn't be the deal breakers. Mm. But if you want to have some sort of shared faith, and I'm not saying you have to exactly the same whatever, but just a basic shared faith, that's a good idea. And someone who you can trust, that's a good idea. Someone who's not fiscally irresponsible. You might be different. One might be a little more of a spender and one's a saver, and that's fine. But it's like, if someone's irresponsible, that's just not safe. And it's like, God loves us. And it's like, love protects. It's like, I always want to protect people. So yeah, you can't look for perfection because it's going to be a human. But there are some things that really matter.
And some of those things that we've just talked about are things you're not going to know when you first meet somebody or even a month or two of seeing someone or dating. And so I do think those expectations can get in the way. You can say, I'm not going to continue a romantic relationship with someone that I find out of the pale on those things. But if that's what you're looking for, then you're not just making friendships, you're actually looking for a romantic partner. And I think in some ways that will come back to haunt you because you just got to get to know people and then some will connect. And marriage is the best way God has to teach us love and to teach us love for flawed people. And you're going to come up with it. I like what Tracy said. We're all flawed. So there's things that are going to be unattractive about someone that we may be falling in love with, but you notice how falling in love cancels out some of those perfectionist items I might want to have when I sit and dream about a partner. I would really push back in wanting people just to have connections and friendship and looks where it goes. And, you know, trustworthy is important. Financially somewhat responsible is important. But a lot of the other things about height, weight, size, whatever, it just, you're limiting yourself, like you said, to a 1% in your region that you're not likely to find. And if you do, you're probably not in the 1% that they're looking for. And so then that can be very, very frustrating. Underneath all this has to be, if God wants to bring that connection into my life, he will. I'm not going to sit on my couch and hope she knocks on my door or he, but I'm going to, you know, make myself available, be out there, take an interest in people, build friendships, and then there'll be some friendship that becomes the one you want to live with. You know, that was for me and Sarah back in our dating days. We dated a long time before we even thought about marriage, but as we were dating, it was, I can't imagine life without her. And then that's the person you want to marry. And neither one of us were perfect when we made that. And we didn't even know the depth of our imperfections till long after we were married. But do you have enough love to get through life with this person and be there for them?
I think that's a great segue, Wayne, to to talk about trauma. So there's been, especially in the 30s, 40s, 50 somethings that I'm having conversations with, there's a lot of conversation about, okay, why does it feel like the only people who are left that are single are navigating some kind of extensive trauma background or trauma history or trauma experience? And how do I navigate that in a healthier, wholehearted relationship?
Wow.
We're waiting for you to answer that, Kyle.
Here we go. I like
that's all right. Nice flip. I think one of the things that I strongly encourage people to start with is doing their own work. And so the more that you invest in your own work and allowing God to really untangle those things in your heart, especially people that I've worked with that have had pretty extensive trauma backgrounds, and they're like, am I even going to have the capacity for a healthy relationship? It's like, no, that you are not beyond the healing love and power of the Holy Spirit in your life. That is, you are so far not beyond what he is capable of bringing beauty and absolute glory out of. But it takes that time to be intentional, to invest, to be aware. When I'm teaching my counseling students, one of the biggest things that we start with in our intro to counseling class is know thyself. That one of your primary ethical responsibilities is to know what you are bringing into the room. And I would say that's the same in relationships, that you're not going to be perfect. They're not going to be perfect. If you have a trauma background, that's okay. But taking that time to do the work and know, okay, this is how I react in these types of situations. I can actually inform somebody as we're going through as we're building even just the friendship of, hey, these are some situations that I don't normally like to get into because I have a history with them. I'm still growing with them. But just to let you know, this is something that I don't like to be involved with. That taking that time to invest and really know yourself, to do that work, to start the untangling process, I think is a big part of it. And I mean, for me, I had my own pretty extensive trauma background, and my wife did as well. We did not go into the relationship with completely blank slates, no trauma entering whatsoever. And so there's also been a lot of the two of us being a support, a cheerleader, a catalyst, an advocate for one another to be able to see that continued healing work in that individual's life. And so not to discount or discredit yourself or another person just because they're navigating the past.
And I think the younger you are, the more naive you'll be about that. You know, you may not even know you've got it. Like in Sarah's case, don't even know you have a trauma background. It doesn't come out till later. But one of the things it really points to, it hasn't come up yet, that's valuable in a partner is that you feel safe with them. You feel safe, emotionally safe. Financially safe. And that doesn't mean they have independent wealth. It just means that the whole thing about responsibility versus just wasting money or living with high debt and want to bring that into a marriage. But there is love will get past all those things. When love takes hold, and particularly if it's a person that God's kind of directing you towards, kind of aiming you at. And I don't mean the courtship thing or any of that, but I just mean the more the friendship grows, the more the heart wants to have a connection with that person. And safety becomes real important. But also comes the flexibility. Go, my wife will discover things about herself that she doesn't know. My husband is not going to necessarily come right out with all of his stuff in a dating relationship. That's hopefully they're going to ignore it when they get married, and then it just surfaces later. And so it's got to be the flexibility to say, I'm loving the whole person. And the commitment of marriage, I think, is, you know, we're in this for life, and we're in this come hell or high water as much as the other one will participate in that. And I realize sometimes one partner or the other checks out in a way that's hurtful. But just the commitment to, this is a person I'm going to love. And I'm going to keep adjusting to as they keep adjusting to me.
And I think that was especially something that when Jess and I were exploring whether or not we wanted to pursue marriage with one another, we tried to be as open and as authentic as we could in the moment with the knowledge that we had. And so we brought things like, What is our financial situation? What is our physical situation? So, for example, I needed to know that I was okay with not having our own biological children before I proposed to Jess, because that we didn't think we were going to be able to have our own kids going into the marriage. And so I needed to know that my heart was going to be okay with that, because Jess had that information. She trusted me enough to share that with me. And then I had to make it an informed decision of, okay, where is my heart at with this? Where does that fall in the priorities? And so we tried to be as open and as authentic with one another as we could going into the marriage, so that we could make those decisions, those authentic decisions to continue to choose one another. Now, that built over time, and that built with trust, that level of vulnerability. That's not a first date conversation by any means, but that was one of the things that we tried to build in our relationship.
Cool.
My relationship with Bruce was completely different than what y'all both described with yours. We were both sort of a mess. And within a couple of years of us being married, I found myself slipped into a relationship with Jesus. And Bruce was kind of my, you know, he was my Jewish husband. And he was like, what has my wife become? I was like reading the Bible. And I was like kind of excited about what I was reading in the Bible, because I was like, whoa, this is good ideas. I was reading Proverbs. I was like, wow, there's some good ideas in here. And then he came to faith about a year after I did, but wasn't kind of focusing on God the kind of the way my heart was. And it's been messy. We've had a messy, when we've had so many sweet times, and then we've had a lot of hard stuff. And what's great about my marriage right now is that we both have found ourselves in good spaces where we're enjoying the Lord. And of course, that's what's making it so beautiful. So there's lots of healing, and my marriage is actually quite beautiful. it's like a garden that's blooming. But it's been messy. Mm. And so the fantasy that people have is when I meet somebody, everything's going to be beautiful or perfect. My daughter teaches at a school, and she's 30, and she's single, and would love to be married and have a husband, but she's a pretty content girl. But she's got a dear friend at her school who's a teacher as well. And I think she's late 30s, maybe early 40s. She has three kids, and her husband passed away. And so she finds herself single. And she's been really sweet to my daughter. And just the kind of conversations that they get to have about how can I find contentment in this season with what my situation is.
Can we get a little bit into what is God's role in this? I hear a lot of feedback on, is unequally yoked even a thing anymore? Where does shared faith come into this? Where does God's voice in the dating process come into play? I have some connections with the charismatic community, and so there's a lot of the God told me to marry this person, or God ordained this thing, and saw a lot of that, unfortunately, in the YWAM community. And unfortunately, most of those relationships did not work out very well. They ended up falling apart or ended up in a divorce. And so I would just love to get some feedback on, what is the Holy Spirit, what is God's role in bringing together or creating a relationship with another human being?
There's a dance with you and God. It's not all God, I don't do anything. It's kind of like we talked about a podcast a long time ago, Brad and I did, about the prayer dance, where communing with God in prayer is a deal. It's not, here's the four things I can do and God has to answer, and here's how to be sensitive to him. It's all what God wants and nothing that I contribute to that. I think the same thing's true in this relationship. I still encourage people to be somewhat equally yoked in their spiritual passion. I think that's bedrock, what makes a relationship work. As to whether God's going to tell you on the street, that's your wife over there, go introduce yourself. I have couples who tell me that story and actually happened. I think that's a very slim minority of people. I don't think that's the way God does it or the way he always has to, but I want God involved in every decision in my life and everything. And if this feels like him, lean towards it. And when it doesn't feel like him, lean away from it. And then watch how life confirms the wisdom of those decisions.
When I'm doing relational coaching, one of the questions that I tend to push back at people is, okay, how important is your relationship with Christ? where does that fall in your world and your priorities? And often they'll come back and say, oh, that's, I mean, it's foundational to me. That's how I navigate my life, et cetera, et cetera. And so then my feedback to them is, okay, if that's the case and you want to truly be known by your partner, wouldn't you want them to be able to know and appreciate that about you? To have a similar passion and a similar resonance for that, and to be able to connect with that shared love and value of who God is and who, what kingdom life is in your world. Man, that is such a huge piece, especially for Jess and I, when we were navigating through that and that question came up. It's like, he is my compass. Like, that's how I am navigating life. That's how I make decisions. It's so such an integral part in that. And if my partner didn't know that, if my partner didn't understand that, that would leave a very lonely space in my heart that they just didn't understand.
Also be aware too, that spiritual passion changes over the trajectory of a life. And someone may be very passionate for Jesus and go through a real disillusioning phase. And then they're angry at God and sometimes walk away from God. And is love strong enough that if my partner's not on the same page spiritually, am I still going to find a way to love them? I know couples who do that. That is entirely possible. So you can do all the compatibility stuff you want before marriage, but we humans are not only flawed, we also shift over time. And so things can happen that you don't foresee.
Other thing, I tend to be futuristic, but if you do find out that you do share some essence of at least a yearning towards faith, I think that can be helpful because once you start parenting, there are some key things like that can cause a lot of conflict. So it is worthy. You're right. It can change. But if you can start out sort of near the same page, I think that does set you up for a little bit easier parenting, at least when it comes to that topic with the kids.
One of the things that I hear a lot of is a question about how to guard your heart when you are online dating. Between the bots and getting ghosted and the conversations where people are being vulnerable initially, then all of a sudden they disappear. There's just a lot of dialogue about how do I protect my heart, keep my heart open in this process, with the challenges that come with online dating, because there isn't a lot of buy-in. There's not the same relational weight initially as there is with an in-person contact. And so
or accountability. I don't mean that.
Yes,
in a weird way,
no, absolutely.
When you just said what you just said, I immediately thought the word hope when you said, how do I guard my heart? And I think it starts with, as you approach, like, it's like how Wayne said, put yourself out there. Like, don't hide your light. You're a light. If you're in the Lord, you're a light. Don't you hide your light under a bushel. Participate. So if you choose to put yourself out there in that way, as well as letting, like my daughter's, she will not online date. So she's like, please set me up. I want to do the old fashioned thing. Like, please set me. If someone knows me, please set me up. But I think if you're doing online dating, you have to particularly guard your heart and you have to guard your hope. And you've got to, if you pay attention, if you place your hope in this like exchange you're having with this person online, you are setting your heart up for disappointment. You don't want your heart to get sick. So you just don't place your hope in it. You got to keep testing yourself like, okay, where's my hope? And so it's just more about putting your light out there and being careful. And then the other thing I think is when you do go on a date, I mean, we have told our friends this. As a married couple, we've had some of our single friends come to our house. We've helped them do their profile. It's so fun. And my husband will be like, no, don't say that. Like, it's so cute. But we'll help them with their profile. So it's not like they're just out there by themselves. And then we've offered that on their first date, we won't tell them that we're there, but we'll go sit at the same place where they're having their little coffee date with that person. Just again, so they don't feel like it's just them putting themselves out there with this one person. And so if you could find some girlfriends or, you know, guy friends or a married couple who would kind of participate with you, but I would just keep your hope not in this, the exchanges you're having with people.
I love that idea, Tracy, because I think so often one of the feelings that I hear from all age groups is I feel so alone in this, that I feel isolated, that I feel like I'm doing this whole experience on my own. And what you just described sounds much more like doing it in the context of community. So you're using online dating as a tool, but you're still doing it in the context of relational community. And I think that is a pretty unique way to approach it.
Yeah, I like that too. And I would also say about everything in our life, live inside your freedom. If online dating and somebody ghosting you, if that devastates you, then stay out of the environment. If you can realize that most of the men you might come across in a dating profile are going to be creeps. And if they ghost you or whatever, that's not personal. If it is personal to you, then it's going to devastate you. If you can just say, I'm not another one of those guys, but is it worth culling through? And I've met a lot of people, 50s and 60s, who are now married to a partner they met online dating, for which it was a positive experience in the sense that they could divorce themselves, bad word probably, from the creeps and just go, that's not my problem. Yeah. That's their problem. But that takes a certain amount of internal security in who you are and contentment in God and some of those things we've talked about. But if it's of a devastating environment for you, stay away. And if you can navigate the occasional creep or maybe the frequent creep in hope of finding somebody that I can have a real connection with, then keep doing it.
I think the idea of your sense of self may already answer this question, but I've heard a lot of fear. So individuals that I've talked to, they're evaluating a current relationship that they're in. They view that relationship as toxic, that they need to probably end the relationship. It's not healthy for their heart. But one of the biggest fears that is stopping them from doing that is, I don't want to go back into the dating world. I don't want to have to start over. I don't want to have to try this all over again.
Because I don't want to be alone.
Because I don't want to be alone. And them they're being willing to stay in a relationship that in some regards is incredibly unhealthy for them, but at least it's familiar. At least I'm not alone. At least I'm able to connect with someone. What would your feedback be to somebody who is in that space evaluating a relationship?
It sounds desperate to me. If the drive is, I don't want to be alone, so I'm willing to keep going with somebody that's not treating me well. That's one of the things we taught my daughter and my son both when they were growing up, is the biggest indicator of anything is how well do they treat you? Do they get mad and dump on you? Do they not care about your feelings? So I think that's really critical. Treat somebody well and anticipate that they will treat you well. And if not, it's a deal breaker.
And it's almost like you'd wish that God would give that person a revelation of how, like, I have grandkids right now and I'm crazy about them. And like my 3-year-old granddaughter the other day was so mad at me that she threw this big fit, and I just adore her and disciplined her, but I adore her. And I just think about God and how he loves people, and to have a revelation of the dignity, like who you are is valuable and you're made in God's image. And if every person had a revelation, some level, you know, even a fraction of the dignity of who they are, you would want that to transfer to, I don't want to be treated. I don't deserve to be treated poorly. I am, you know, that you would want them to have that. I would just want that for every person to have a revelation of that they are valuable and they have dignity and they should be treated with dignity. And they should treat themselves with dignity by not dating a jerk.
And keep in mind, it is better to be single than to be attached to the wrong person.
I would affirm that, because I think that's one of the other spaces that I hear, the laments that I hear so often is, I wasn't at rest with myself. I needed to have somebody in my life. I got into this relationship, and yet it's saturated my world with pain because of the unhealth of it, because of the insecurity that was born out of it.
Yep.
This conversation, I think it is an intriguing one. And especially, I think, for our teens, 20s, 30-something, Wayne, you know this is a personal passion of mine, but how do they desire, or how do they manage their physical sexual desires in their teens, 20s, 30s, especially in the dating world where there's all the pressure for nudes or unsolicited nudes that are coming, et cetera? How do they navigate that in the digital age, especially with some of the social norms that are have been created in our culture as of late?
Miss Unashamed, go for it.
I have an opinion. I have a strong opinion about this. So I'm, you know, was secular girl, not brought up with any of the religious trappings that came with how we view sexuality. But then I came to faith in God and walked into the Christian culture, and I saw a bunch of shame around sexuality. And so I actually, but it's so funny because I feel like sexuality belongs in covenant very strongly in the most unreligious way. And because it's safe, it's safest. It, you know, again, I always think it's for both, but I always come from a female perspective. And so I always want my girls, I don't care what age they are, but I want them to be in the most safe situation possible. And so I think sexuality is gorgeous. And I think it's a God-given gift, and there's nothing shameful and there's nothing icky about it. And so, but from that, it's this treasure. And back to the dignity thing, I'm just going to do for women and for men too, but your sexuality is dignified, and it is a gift that you bring into this covenant. And the whole thing about, you know, it's like all this mystery, but it's like awesome when it's like the two shall become one, and it's this picture of Christ in the church, and it's awesome. When I talk to young men and young women and really express, I'm not a prude. Like, I think sex is great. And you have a high sex drive. I think that's amazing. But I am like a hard no. Like, it's a hard no for me. Your sexuality, anything to me, this is just me, anything beyond kissing that arouses your body and makes your body want to have sex is a hard no. And you're right, the online culture is a hookup culture. I have another young woman that is in my life right now, and she's online dating, and she's not a believer and doing the culture thing. And what happens is it's devastating for the heart. Your body wasn't meant to attach to all these people, and it's unhealthy. And talk about the unraveling that you have to do later. It's not helpful. If you want to have a really healthy marriage, if you experience all those things, you can always stop and start a new thing. But sexuality belongs inside of covenant. And so you can be sexual and be this beautiful gift and sexuality, and maybe some guy can be lucky enough to have you. But my heart's desire is that it's like no hooking up. Like, I look at the girls and they're like, really? And I'm like, oh yeah, really? Like, it's like, no, but no judgment, no condemnation. And if you have, but I'm going to keep telling you, no, don't. You're too awesome.
Have you heard of the singer Talisa? I don't know who she is, but I saw this quote and I loved that. I don't know what her thing, it didn't come from a religious thing at all. But she says about sex and dating, I need to have a really close emotional bond with someone. I need actual depth. For me, it's all about the connection and the emotions that I feel with someone and then wanting to express them in that way. My body is my temple and you cannot enter. That last phrase, if that's how we felt about our bodies, that sex is such a beautiful, wonderful expression inside a relationship with a spouse. And I'll just say it that way. And the idea that's because your body is your temple. And when you let someone enter it that is not in a long-term covenanted relationship with you, you're defiling it. You will get hurt. It's just, particularly if the relationship has no longevity, and particularly if you're sharing it sexually to hold on to a relationship, bad news. That'd be a hard no as well.
Well, then your intimacy, your physical intimacy is become what your emotional intimacy can't become. Your spiritual and your emotional intimacy with that person. You never want that physical intimacy to supersede the emotional and the spiritual intimacy.
See, and this is an interesting space because one of the laments that I hear a lot from specifically younger ladies, is I have to make a choice. A guy who's having sex, a guy who's addicted to porn, or a guy who's having sex and is addicted to porn. Like they view it as those are my three options.
You're right. The porn thing is a big deal right now with the girls that I talk to. And here's why I had it recently. I have a young woman that I know that's been very careful with her temple. And she doesn't want to date any guy who's had sex in his past. And the advice I've given her has been, just because I mentor women who are in marriages with maybe a husband who had a porn addiction. And I'm like, I would rather if a guy had sex with his girlfriend and he was faithful to him, you had to choose between that guy and the guy who has a porn addiction now. Pick the guy who was faithful to his girlfriend and was weak and had sex with her and is in love with you and you believe he would be faithful to you, not the guy. Again, this is another hard no that I have with girls. And that's only because they ask me my opinion. But it's like the porn thing. And again, my son, he it's in my book, but my son had a porn addiction in high school. And he's totally walked through it and got help and has married and has kids and has a beautiful marriage and he's great. So you can overcome that. He overcame it. But I tell women, do not enter into any marriage with a man or relationship who is currently entrenched in a porn addiction. It will be devastating and it can lead to all kinds of things. So again, that porn addiction, and again, no condemnation. I mean, I hate that for men, you know. Wayne, you didn't grow up as a 14-year-old boy with a phone sitting that, you know, that could had access to anything. You know, but these boys did, and it's been difficult for them, but it's a no. Like, porn addiction is a no.
Does that get you down to the 1% again?
Well, I mean, their misery, sorrow, challenge. It's like, you know, yes, okay, so my husband leaves his shoes everywhere. he splashes the mirror right after I've wiped the mirror. But a porn addiction, sorrow. Like, that's sorrow, right?
It is, but, and realizing how weak most men are to that kind of thing, if you find that that's true, then I wouldn't necessarily write off the relationship if a lot of other things are good, but let him overcome it before you get to marriage.
Correct.
Inside the relationship.
Yeah, because a lot of the, specifically teens, late teens, early 20s that I do a lot of coaching with or just have conversations with, et cetera, for a lot of them, it is a norm. It's not even seen as unfaithful for a lot of them to have their partner have a Rolodex of nudes of either previous partners or photos of other people that they weren't even partners with, and to have that on their phone as they're in a supposedly committed relationship, that's not even a write-off. That's not even an issue or seen as being unfaithful to someone.
But it needs to be.
It needs to be, yes. Yeah. And
I wouldn't give up on that. I just said, dude, if you're interested in dating me, you got to burn all that stuff.
The intriguing part is the teens right now in the early 20-somethings, they are reacting stronger to somebody who is talking to someone else, who is having an emotional connection with somebody else other than them in a committed relationship, than they are of that person having a Rolodex of nudes on their phone. So they would rather the person be watching porn or have a Rolodex of nudes than be potentially talking to someone else emotionally while they're in a committed relationship.
You mean an emotional connection with another person that's closer than, because if it's just that they're talking to other people or of the opposite sex, that's, I'm going to define who's being insecure and weird here, or is this legitimately, I have this girl here that I'm dating, but I'm really emotionally connected more to this woman over here.
They're emotionally in a relationship with someone, a romantic relationship with someone, but they're still flirting with other people. So that when I say talking, that's the, you know, the late teen, early 20 something vernacular for, but they're also still flirting with other people emotionally. There's no physical interaction that's happening whatsoever, but they're flirting with them. And they react stronger to that than they do to somebody with a porn addiction or with photos of their ex on their phone that they're masturbating to.
I would think they'd both be a problem. Yes.
I do. I think they're both a problem, but I want to do a caveat with that.
Okay.
I remember being in college, and it was back in the setup days where your friends would set you up. And it was a bit normal. And it was not, definitely was not expected to have, like, you casual sex wasn't as much. I mean, you had boyfriends and yeah, you had inappropriate relationships with them, but it wasn't as much that. So you'd get set up. And so I remember 1 week I got set up 3 times and somebody's like, oh gosh, you got to meet my best friend from high school. He's so cute. I think y'all get along. And I remember having a coffee date with him. And then I remember going out. I had 3 dates. Maybe I kissed one of the guys. I don't remember, but nothing happened. I just met 3 guys in a week. That was not abnormal. So I was talking, but I know what you mean. I know that lingo, the talking thing. We're talking, which to them, that means something. Mm-hmm. It's like, cause you're kind of getting there. It was like, I'm getting there. We're talking. Yep. He's not my boyfriend, but we're talking. And so I think because the question is, if you are in a committed relationship and it is established, I wish that we could coach them that we should be talking. We should be getting to know different people. And it's okay. Like it's like that whole thing about flirting. It's like flirting is how you kind of, flirting's the appropriate way to find out if you can be playful and have fun with somebody, if there's a connection. And so as long as you've accepted that, like that week where I went out with 3 guys, I was just looking around to see if there was somebody that I would have, and I ended up not really, one of them ended up being a friend, you know, but it's like, and you did, that's what kind of what Wayne said earlier. It's like, I, because of the atmosphere in my generation, we became friends with people we might've gotten set up with, like good friends. So it was wonderful, cause it was fun to have. In fact, one of the things about after I got married was kind of a bummer because I was really careful about my guy friendships after that. You know, it wasn't appropriate for me to talk to my, you know, and I had some really cool guy friends. What I did is I had my husband become friends with those guy friends so we could still be, you know, friendly, but it would be appropriate because Bruce would be friends with them as well. But until you're in a committed relationship where you're really pursuing something, it's okay. But they need, it's almost like they need to be reframed that the naked thing is not what I used to say to my son and his friends in high school. When I'd walk in and they'd be watching a movie and of course I'd walk into the bad scene and my son would go, Mom, it only happens when you walk in the room, you know, the inappropriate, you know, and I'd stop the TV and I'd say, hey guys, look. Just so you know, I think sexuality is amazing. And then my son would be various face and his friends would go, oh, Miss Levinson. And I'd say, no, seriously, I want you guys to have amazing sex lives when you get older. And I want you to know you guys are so visual. And so the more you look at stuff, it's going to not be helpful to you. So just be aware that what's your goal? Is your goal to have an amazing sex life with your wife? Well, keep as few images as you can out of your head. So, you know, it's like Adam when he saw Eve, what did he say? Bone of my bone, flesh of, like, wow, look what God gave me.
I hear you. But I think what I heard Kyle asking was if they're in a committed relationship and the guy or girl is still shopping for something better.
That's not good.
That's a red light.
I just have one more question, I think, to kind of wrap this up. When I was practicing in private practice as a marriage and family therapist, I found myself doing more divorce transition therapy than I did marriage counseling. So people who were either in the process of filing for divorce or they were on their way out or whatever, for whatever reason, what would be initial advice to someone who has recently navigated divorce? They still have the desire for a relationship. How would you encourage them to move forward in a healthy way? What would your advice be, or what would your feedback be to someone who said, hey, I, I've been through a divorce and now I think I might want to get back into the dating pool. How do I navigate this pursuit of a relationship post-divorce?
Well, I'd be nuts if they're thinking it all in godly terms of making sure the divorce gets settled out inside of Jesus. If it's, I've got to replace what I've lost right away, that's going to end up bad news. That almost always is true. We'll talk about this probably next week when we talk about my trip to Boise, because that's a lot of people who've come out of a pretty abusive religious situation. And the idea is I've got to find another group right away because I'm trying to fill something. Yeah. And I think it's important to find our fullness in Christ. And I know it seems weird, but it is. I'm find my contentedness, my settledness in Him. And I don't mean perfection. I just mean so that I'm not going back into the dating pool, to, quote unquote, with the need not to be alone and the need to fill the place that I lost with someone. That'd be, so I'd say take it slow. And when you're ready to get back in that pool again, build friendships. Don't go looking for a partner. Just build friendships. And out of their friendship pool, someone may emerge that is, this is the person I really want to walk in a more intentional way with.
I just think that there's a divorce usually comes with a lot of sorrow. So I think that sometimes people will, what I find sometimes is while they're going through the divorce, it's not, they're not even divorced yet. They already start looking online and reaching out to old boyfriends and they're, you know, they're trying to scratch an itch, which I totally understand. Like it makes sense. You're hurting. But I think I would agree with what Wayne said in that pressing into the reality, not just like religion, you know, like, oh, you should be, you know, focus on God, but it's like pressing into the reality of Christ, which is where contentment resides, the realness of that, and enjoying your friendships and really focusing on your friendships. And maybe if you have kids, they're probably hurting because no matter what age, it's always hard on kids. And just trying to be the healthiest person that you can be. And kind of where we started in this podcast of, if you like to hike, join a hiking club. You know, if you like, take a class and begin. And then, of course, you can always do a divorce care at a church. You don't have to go to the church, but if they have one, there might be a good one going on and check it out.
Yeah. No, I think that there's also two things that I hear consistently that I strongly encourage people to give some space and time to. And that's the conversation of shame and the conversation of grief. Because usually there are, especially in the grief context, there were plans that were made. There was aspirations for the marriage. There was long-term dreams that you had. There was visions, there was perspectives that you had. And that has come to a close. And so to really give the space to allow your heart to grieve that and actually experience it as a major grief or as a loss, because that's what it was. That's what it is. And so to honor the fact and to give yourself, your body, your emotion space to be able to do that. And I think the other piece is the enemy really loves to tangle shame into a divorce in some pretty intentional, nasty ways. And really allowing God to address those spaces, those conversations of identity, of your own value, of your own self-worth in the context of His love versus the context of the situation that you just got done navigating.
Okay, we're good?
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, guys. I know there's a lot of questions, but this is literally, these are just from the conversations I've had in the last 2.5 months. So this has been good. I've really enjoyed this.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.